This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out now, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And we have an unbeatable price right now that you can only get for a limited time. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro for just $199. It's normally $240 a year. You can subscribe right now by using promo code SHARP. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That is 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides. Like the NFL guide to keep you betting smarter all year long. Do not miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide with this incredible deal. It's VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code SHARP. You get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 and access to the NFL guide, VSiN.com/subscribe. Back on the Wednesday edition of Sharp Money, I'm Ben Wilson, joined by Adam Burke. Our producer Wyatt Tomchek is here, and so pleased for the next two segments to be joined by a man you see his work so often on VSiN.com. It is Tyler Shoemaker, clearly a fan of the Bronny James draft based on his wardrobe today. So good to have you on, man.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here. Had to represent for the Lakers and Bronny.
He's putting the sharp in sharp money with the there way he's go. Dressed here.
That I was waiting for Adam to
Five
go with that
points for
line.
Adam right there.
I'm glad that you did that. Are you going to be betting the Bronny James 250-1 rookie of the year? You're not drinking that Kool-Aid enough.
No, I like to win money when I bet, so I'm going to stay away from
Smart
that.
Smart man. Smart. Should not even be on the odds board, but that's neither here nor there. What we do want to talk about, though, it's this summer stretch. I think a lot of people are gearing up for betting on football, whether that's college, that's NFL, and just your model in general here, the T-Shoe Index. That's where you follow Tyler, by the way. You're doing this across multiple sports. We're going to get into some WNBA this segment, then talk NFL in our next segment with you. But just from a very basic standpoint, I think a lot of people always ask, especially when they have some downtime in summer, all right, well, how do I create a model if I want to do this? What goes into it? What does it spit out? How do I use that data to bet for you? How did this all start, and what were kind of the key elements that you looked into as you started to create it?
Yeah, so this has been about a seven-year evolution of the model, which literally started with a pen and paper and nice. Has evolved into a more basic spreadsheet. And then as I learned more like Python scripts and things like that, more automation, it's gotten more and more complex over the years. Basically, I wanted to be able to solve and answer the question, regardless of sport, to your point, how many points would Team A be expected to score and allow versus Team B? Because there are now... In this day and age of analytics, there's a stat and a number for everything. So there's a lot of noise out there. So you have to be able to sift through that. And again, it's been a lot of trial and error over the years. But I wanted to have something that, I spit out just an offensive rating and a defensive rating for every team so that the people that are looking at my work can easily digest it. Because when you start talking about, in football, EPA per play and this and that, I think it gets confusing to the average fan. So I wanted to have something very simple and digestible that I can put out there.
Tyler, I'm a big-time data guy, right? I'm big into sabermetrics. I'm big into a lot of the advanced stats in the football community. And a lot of times, you need significant sample sizes for those things to really be relevant. So in terms of your model, are you looking at full-season data? Or are you kind of weighting maybe recent form a little bit more? How does that kind of play out with the T-Shoe Index?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something I'm always testing on the side. So, for instance, last year I pretty much relied mostly on season-long data, both for football and basketball. This year I'm taking a little bit different approach based on some backtesting that I did, and I am weighing the last five games more heavily than I was before, whereas I was weighing them all kind of the same season-long. But now I am putting more emphasis on those recent games, which I think helps kind of get ahead of the market in a lot of cases, when a team gets hot or goes the other way and is falling off a cliff, like we'll talk about here in a little bit with the Connecticut Sun, who have really dropped over the last handful of games.
Sure. I think the hardest thing, too, you talk about getting ahead of the market, it's for anybody who even puts together their own numbers, whether it's using a deep dive model or just doing it more by feel, you make a number, you check the market, and oftentimes if you are off, you're thinking, I think a lot of us, our first instinct is, okay, am I doing something wrong here? If I'm so far off, and especially if it's, say, NFL, right, where you have a very well-respected market, lots of people, lots of money betting into it, how do you parse that together and figure out, okay, I'm off, say, by 4 or 5 points. Where do you kind of draw the line of, oh, this means it's a max bet versus, okay, do I need to tweak things and figure out how the model should be slightly more in line with the market, even if it shouldn't be in lockstep every single time?
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of people do fall into. They either go one extreme or the other with it, where they either just use the market as their starting point to make their number, which you're not really going to beat the market if you're using their number. But then on the other side of it, to your point, you also don't want to be so far off the market that it just doesn't make sense and you might be missing something. So for me, you know, for instance, with my college football numbers, my preseason numbers, I don't look at the market before I do it. I get my first kind of rough draft of them. I reference the market at that point and then say, okay, do I need to come up or down on a team based on the data that I have? But if the data doesn't support it, I don't, you know, just pull numbers out of thin air.
Sure.
Sometimes, you know, like Clemson, for instance, is a team that I'm significantly off on from the market, but that's just what the data tells me.
So speaking of the data here, we're about halfway through the WNBA season. It's 40-game season. The fewest number of games, Las Vegas Aces have played 17. We were actually there last night as they blew out the Indiana Fever. Now that the market is tightening up, do you find yourself trusting your numbers more to go out there and try and get some of that line value?
Yeah, I was actually just noticing this morning because I do track my absolute error, you know, how accurate my numbers are. And that number, as we've gone here over the last couple of weeks, is ticking down. You know, for most of the season, it was around 10 points of error on both the side and the total. And that's down to 9 points now overall.
It's really nice when you can have a reference point like that. As we're joined by Tyler Shoemaker here on VSiN Sharp Money, we'll talk specifically here some WNBA right now. As far as the, you know, the game-to-game stuff, you guys mentioned being at the fifth most highest recorded attendance in WNBA history last night, although it ended up being a blowout. Aces beat the Fever with Caitlin Clark in her first game coming to Las Vegas over at T-Mobile Arena. Just one game on the card tonight. What do you look at for, say, Phoenix and Dallas, who Dallas has certainly been on the bottom end of the spectrum, really struggling this year. Phoenix, a 5-point road favorite. And a big move to the over, which has been a common theme in recent NBA weeks here, Tyler, 171.5. How do your numbers match up with where the market is at in, let's just say, this one-off specific example tonight?
Yeah, I wrote about this at VSiN.com today. Dallas has been so disappointing. One of the worst bets I made this year was betting their season win total over. They have just been a dumpster fire. But even more frustratingly so, they've been inconsistent, where there have been nights where they compete with elite teams, so it's really been hard to get a gauge on them. My numbers project the Mercury -7.5 in this game, but we're hearing rumblings that Brittany Griner won't play. I have her worth about 3 points to the spread, which would put it right in line with the market at 4.5. And then on the total, I project about 170. So really no edge to be had here tonight in Mercury Wings game.
So you do have a couple of games on Thursday, and that article that you referenced over at VSiN.com, because there was only the one game tonight, you threw in the Thursday projections as well, which, you know, is a good thing, right? I mean, if you're able to follow Tyler on X at Tissue Index, you know, you are posting your opening numbers, right, getting in front of the market a little bit. And as I said, we got a couple of games tomorrow night. You'll actually be at the Las Vegas Aces game against the Washington Mystics, and they're a monster favorite in that one. But you mentioned the Connecticut Sun, a team that has kind of stood out a little bit here in your model. They're about a 2-point dog taking on the Minnesota Lynx, total in the 154.5 range. What's your play in this one, and what is the model telling you?
Yeah, I really like the under here. These are the top two defenses in the league per my numbers. I actually project this total at like 142. So a huge discrepancy, you know, like we talked about. I did go double check to make sure that that was correct, because that is, you know, a huge discrepancy. And I normally don't see that big of a discrepancy from the market, but that's what the data says, and I'm going to ride with it. And I certainly don't have any trepidation of betting an under with the Lynx and the Sun, who have been really, really prominent under teams this year.
So you told me last night, actually, when we were at the game, because, like I said, you're going to the Mystics and Aces game tomorrow. I think you said you had the Aces around a 10.5-point favorite as of last night. Market showing them a 16.5-point favorite in tomorrow night's game. Did you adjust the Aces off of that performance last night? And if so, is it still a play for you on the Mystics?
So the number still is 10 for me. I think that has to do with the Mystics are dealing with a lot of injuries right now. None of those players are what I would consider elite, you know, line-moving players, at least the way I would adjust my number. So I'm comfortable at the 10 with the Aces. I will say, though, over the last five games, the Aces, I mean, since Chelsea Gray's been back, they've been on fire. I wouldn't want to bet against them right now. I'm kind of taking caution here and thinking maybe my numbers haven't quite caught up to how good the Aces are with Chelsea Gray in the lineup.
Power ratings-wise, Ace is still favored to win it all. 6-6 start, 5 wins in a row since the Chelsea Gray return from injury. Liberty at +185. It's been a very weird discourse as far as the Aces getting off to the slow start, not what we're used to seeing for the two-time defending champs. Where do you have those top two just in your own ratings as we stand right now?
Yeah, so I've got the Liberty still number one by about 2 points above the Aces, and then another drop before you get to the Lynx and the Sun. I do think we're probably on another collision course here for the Liberty and the Aces. They've got the most star power in the league. I mean, Adam said it last night at the game. It was just amazing to see Asia Wilson just in her bag. I mean, Kelsey Plum had a great game, but Asia Wilson is just a machine. And the Liberty, though, have Jonquel Jones, who is a nice matchup for her inside. So I'm excited. I hope that is the finals, and I'd be excited to watch that.
Fun atmosphere last night, to say the least. I mean, you guys were enjoying it. It was a packed house. You wish it would have been a slightly closer game, but still great to see how the WNBA has grown and so much more betting interest as a result. Tyler Shoemaker with us here on Sharp Money. Follow him at TShoeIndex, and we will keep Tyler on for another segment because we're going to talk about what he wrote in his NFL betting guide. We'll dive into the NFC South with Tyler when we come back here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Right now on VSiN.com, we have all sorts of best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. It's a refreshed look, optimized for mobile. Hey, our Adam Burke, he's on the homepage. I wonder how he finagled that. Talking MLB best bets for the rest of the Wednesday card. Also, Tyler Shoemaker with his write-ups on the WNBA, NFL, college football. Any sport where Tyler has a model attached to it, you will see his work at VSiN.com. As we have Tyler on with us for another segment here on VSiN Sharp Money with Adam Burke, Wyatt Tomczyk, our producer. I'm Ben Wilson. All right, Tyler, ready for some NFL. I mean, WNBA is great. It's a great way to pass the time in summer, and there are great betting edges to be had, but a lot of interest now with our NFL betting guide being released on how to look at some futures here for the NFL season. You were tasked with the NFC South division for our guide here. As far as let's just start top down here with this division, when you're trying to put together a rating for a team with so much change, and Atlanta is a team who's favored to win the division, yet it's change across the board from a coaching perspective, quarterback perspective. How did you try to put together a proper rating on the Falcons who come in with that 9.5 win total?
Yeah, it was really difficult. So honestly, what I did, I looked at what Minnesota's numbers look like with Kirk Cousins to try to kind of account for maybe what the offense might do and project that forward. So, you know, last year they were only 27th in EPA per play and 20th in success rate. So the offense, I think, is going to take a huge step forward. The defense was pretty good, ranked 12th in defensive EPA per play and 5th in defensive success rate. So if the defense just stands pat and the offense takes the leap that I think a lot of people would expect them to with Kirk Cousins coming into the fold, I think they definitely should be the division favorites.
Well, and then, of course, you got Raheem Morris, first-year head coach there. One of a couple of first-year head coaches in this division, Dave Canales, of course, being the other one with the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, let's talk about Carolina for a second here because, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Atlanta, right? There's been a ton of talk about Atlanta in terms of their futures price, you know, in terms of drafting Michael Penix Jr., which still to this day makes no sense. But when you get a really objectively bad team like Carolina, how are you able to, Tyler, in your model – you know, keep yourself from either being too low on that team or being in a position where you have to bet on them all the time?
It is a very frustrating proposition. That's a great question because I do find myself, like last year, I found myself showing value on Carolina a lot because, you know, everyone's just like, you know, people that bet teams and not necessarily numbers, no one wants to bet on Carolina because they're terrible. So that does show some value in the model from a week-to-week basis betting, but it is, I mean, it's ugly business trying to bet the Panthers on a weekly basis.
Well, so that's the question, right? I mean, are you hardline, like the model says, I have to bet this, I'm going to bet this, or do you apply, you know, a little bit of discretion to the whole thing?
I certainly have discretion. You know, I try to use my head. I basically will give the model the benefit of the doubt a couple of times, and then it's like, okay, my model just cannot keep up with how bad this team is, and then I just will write them off altogether and just stay away.
Talking NFC South here with Tyler Shoemaker. Wrote that division up for our VSiN NFL betting guide, which is now out, has been out now for about a week. I'm fascinated your perspective of all these teams, Tyler, the Saints, from a pure numbers perspective. Saints are a team that I've bet on a lot over the last couple of years. A lot of respected bettors have liked New Orleans, yet they consistently come up short, in large part due to a very bad coach in Dennis Allen, who's among the worst of in-game managerial type of guys. But I don't know how much that really can get reflected in a model. So where do you look at it, a team like the Saints that continually looks good on paper, but clearly this year, finally, the betting market is soured on them, down to 7.5 on a win total. You're number two of Derek Carr, quarterback, but not a lot of optimism when you think about all the ways they've come up short these last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got them a little bit over that. I've got them more like 8.5 wins. So if I had to bet it, I would play them over. This is a team, when I got looking at the numbers, I do think they have a high floor. And obviously playing in this division, it's one of the weaker divisions in football. I mean, I think from a win total perspective, they do have a high floor. There are plenty of winnable games for them, certainly. This is probably a team that I'm, like I said, I'm higher on than the market. Last year they were 14th in EPA per play on offense and 17th in success rate. A lot of that has to do with their offensive line just being shaky, and they really can't push the ball down the field. I mean, they've got Chris Olave, you know, they've got Alvin Kamara, they've got some weapons. I just wonder if they can protect Derek Carr.
Well, and something you noted about the Saints here, and something you noted about the Falcons as well, these are two teams that have very, very weak schedules. The Falcons you actually have with one of the weakest schedules, along with Steve Mackinnon, who does a lot of numbers stuff for our NFL guide and for us over at VSiN.com. You know, the Falcons have a very, very weak schedule. Also, the Saints with a very weak schedule here. So, obviously, a lot of that has to do with the division that they play in because they're playing each other, and this is probably going to be, once again, the weakest division in the NFL, I would say. But how much, you know, do you invest in those win total markets, and how much does strength of schedule, you know, kind of factor into the model for you?
Yeah, a lot, because, you know, obviously I want to come up with the power rating, but then when you couple the power rating, which I have the Saints just above league average, I've got them at a 0.9. And then you combine that with the fact they've got the second worst schedule in the league behind the Falcons, like you said, you know, that would be a recipe for an over, I think. So I absolutely factor that in.
Tyler Shoemaker with us right now on VSiN, native of Greenville, South Carolina, which means you're no stranger to the Fox number 6 game. You know, Panthers, Bucks, you get the last crew, goes to about 6% of the country. Tyler's watching that game locally, then I assume you're finding other ways to watch the rest of the games here. Buccaneers, the one team you've yet to talk about at 7.5. It's sort of wild. I think we all perceive this division because of how weak it has been over the last couple of years is thinking there's been a lot of change as far as different division winners, yet the Bucs are the three-time defending NFC South champions here and continue to, at least based on last season, evade and outperform a lot of the preseason predictions and odds here. Where do you stand on a team second on the odds board, 3-1 to win the division here, Tyler, and 7.5 again on their win total?
Yeah, I'm at 8.2. That was at 8.5, and I agree with the move down. I would have been on the under at 8.5 as well. You mentioned it. They kind of exceeded expectations last year. So I think this is a team that's probably due for some regression. Similar to the Saints, I wrote this up. I think they're similar to the Saints in the fact that they do have kind of a high floor. Like, I don't think they're just going to bottom out, but I also question their ceiling. I also question the 3-year extension they gave Baker Mayfield off of a 1-year sample when, you know, his track record in Cleveland does not support that. You know, I think last year was more of a one-off for him. Happy to be proven wrong there, but this is a team I wouldn't want to bet an over on the Bucs. I think they're due for some regression this year.
Well, of course, the Bucs did lose offensive coordinator Dave Canales to Carolina, so, you know, we'll see what kind of impact that has here in the NFC South. Tyler, if you had to here on July 3rd, is this the Falcons division to lose? Would that be your pick to win this?
Yeah, I think it has to be. I don't know how you could put your money on any other team right now based on the data and the information we have available.
Right. Follow-up question. Do they make any noise in the playoffs if they get there in your estimation? Or at least based on what your numbers are telling you, you know, this far in advance?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have the potential. I mean, Bijan Robinson back, obviously. If the offense, like I said, if the offense gets going and the defense can just maintain what it did last year or be anything close to what it was last year from a metrics perspective, I think they absolutely can. Because I think the league is pretty top-heavy in terms of the AFC teams, at least according to my ratings. But, yeah, I think they absolutely could make a little bit of noise. I wouldn't expect them to win the Super Bowl or anything, but I think they could win a playoff game.
I think it's also good, too, something you were just touching on, noticing where early market moves have gone, because a lot of bettors are just now saying, all right, let me put together my thoughts on the season, let's make some bets. But this market has started to get chiseled into form. That's not to say there isn't value to be found here, Tyler, but what have you noticed specifically with this division? You mentioned one move here, Bucks getting bet a full win to the under. What have been the biggest moves you've seen, whether that's win totals, odds position, or even some of the props that are out there that might be worth at least mentioning here to bettors so far?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't done a whole lot of win total bets or prop bets on the NFL yet. I'm a little late to the party here, doing obviously my WNBA work and my college football work. But like you said, I think at this point, being if you're just now getting in the game, you're probably behind here. So to answer your question, I haven't noticed any huge moves on this division in particular.
Well, we're about 2 months or so away from the start of the NFL season. It'll be week one here. Yeah, September 5th, right, is the kickoff game. Yeah. And interestingly enough, that kickoff game is one that you have some interest in here because you wrote this up as your best bet in the NFL betting guide, taking a look at Baltimore and Kansas City. In that game, Kansas City, of course, back-to-back Super Bowl champions. You mentioned to me last night when we were watching the Aces, too, back-to-back WNBA champions. The regular season seems kind of boring for them, right? I mean, yeah, Chelsea Gray came back and they played differently. They found another gear, but are you worried about that at all with the Kansas City Chiefs in week one taking on a really good Ravens team?
Yeah, 100%. I've got the Ravens as my top team in my preseason ratings, and I think the Chiefs' regular season rating last year kind of reflected some championship fatigue, as I called it. I think it's very difficult in any sport, but in pro sports in particular. Like I said, you saw that with the Warriors, you know, in their glory days. It's hard to be even winning championships or even just being in contention for a championship year after year. It's just mentally and physically taxing. And I think those teams have to kind of slog their way through regular season sometimes, which I think is going to open up some value here betting against the Chiefs in the regular season.
3-point favorite the Chiefs are opening night. Lost last year as 4.5-point favorites opening night outright there to the Detroit Lions. A best bet for week one already in the can from our Tyler Shoemaker. Follow him at T-Shoe Index. Great to have you on, man. True pleasure here getting some time to spend it. Just breaking down your brain. We wanted to see how it worked, and we got some insight. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Tyler Shoemaker with us here on VSiN Sharp Money. We'll continue the NFC South discussion when we come back right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. NFL betting guide out now. There's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we've got an unbeatable offer for you. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at just $199 when you use promo code SHARP. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. It's normally $240 a year, but right now we're offering 13 months of VSiN Pro access for $199. And you get everything we do, including daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Promo code SHARP gets you 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 and instant access to our all-new NFL betting guide. As we're back on Sharp Money, I'm Ben Wilson. Adam Burke, VSiN Managing Editor, is here. You were looking up deep dive facts on Shane Van Giesbergen in our last segment that we all thought we would definitely have a reference of today on the show, but
I am multitasking.
You're multitasking.
I am putting up our Grant Park 165 NASCAR article for this week at the Chicago Street Course.
Just found out that it was called the Grant Park 165.
There you go.
There we go.
The more you know.
NASCAR expert here now just finding out the name of the street race.
Hey, at least I knew what city they were
you
in.
You did know it was in Chicago.
Yeah.
Granted. That is okay. While Adam does that, we want to get guy Robbie Kylan back on the show here to talk some NBA because it has been a big smorgasbord of free agency news here. Now that the dust has settled, some odds are starting to shift as we go out to our progressive guest line. Welcome him in. You can give him a follow at our Kylan, K-A-L-L-A-N-D, as he's the senior writer, deputy editor there at UpRock Sports. Great to see you, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's start in the East here, where the first big move was Paul George going to Philadelphia here. A lot of differing thoughts, I would say, on George. Some people have started to sour on him as he's gotten later on in his career. What do you make, though, of that move here and thinking about where Philadelphia goes now? As they have to be all in for Joel Embiid, was this the right decision for them, though, to make?
I think it was because I don't think there was another really good option out there. I think if you look at the landscape of wings that were available, it was like if they didn't get Paul George, you were talking about, you know, do they start chasing Brandon Ingram? You know, do they try to figure out a stopgap until they could go after somebody else? But this was the only year they were going to have money if Jimmy Butler wasn't going to be available, and that fit wasn't exactly perfect either. George made the most sense. They had to give him the 4 years, and if you're trying to maximize the window now, this is the move you make. I understand why people are a little skeptical of it. Paul George is a different player on paper than he is in actuality, especially in the postseason. But you do see how it should work. And it should work better than Tobias Harris. It should work better than what they've had. And this should be the best trio they've had, as they've been kind of hell-bent on building a big three around Joel Embiid for a while now, dating back to the Ben Simmons years. And now it seems, I think they have their best trio. The real question is, can they build out the rest of the roster? Because right now it is very thin, and they're only going to really be able to work on the margins.
Robbie, when you look at the odds here for the Eastern Conference, Boston plus 150, Philadelphia 4-1, the Knicks plus 450, the Bucks 6-1, both Bucks fans next to me here. How much does the Paul George thing close the gap for you with the Sixers and the Celtics? And, I mean, Boston's under 3-1 to win the NBA title and run it back.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the issue that Philly has is it closes the gap some, but Boston is, we know they are 7-8 playoff rotation deep. They know exactly what they're going to put out there. And Philly, like, how many guys on this roster do you trust? Like, they're probably going to need Eric Gordon to be good. The way this roster is shaking out, like, Kelly Oubre was really nice for them last year. I like bringing him back. But, like, how much do you want to have to rely on him? I think it closes the gap some. It gives them a puncher's chance. And it gives them a chance if Boston is banged up. If Kristaps is out again next year, you know, if he's hurt, that's a bigger concern. Al Horford, another year older. If one of their main guys is out, like, that's kind of where you're at if you're Philly, is you're kind of hoping that you get to that point and the playoff toll takes, you know, the playoff run that Boston's been on, the years that they've played so deep, takes its toll. But I don't think they are the top contender right now to Boston supremacy.
And what makes it fascinating, too, with the way the full NBA title odds are, Boston's one, Philly is actually two, because of how the West is viewed as this an absolute juggernaut, behemoth of teams you have to scratch and claw your way to get through. So the odds are actually favorable for any of these Eastern Conference teams, where it is sort of viewed as, okay, if not Boston, then who? Where do you stand if it is not Philadelphia, the next top contender here? Knicks, Bucks, next on the odds board here. One of those two teams has done a lot. The other has really done nothing, although I think Wyatt would agree with me, is former Wisconsin Milwaukee resident here. I would tell you, the way the cap situation was, I don't know why anybody was expecting Milwaukee to do much. The way their team was already constructed going into the year, whether you want to hear that or whether you don't, that's kind of the reality. But how do you power right now where the Knicks and Bucks are at when it has been so totally different, diverging off seasons for each of them so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the, like, really for me, I put those three teams pretty equal footing. I'd probably put the Knicks at two. I think we're maybe underestimating how good they were with OG and Anobi last year. If he's healthy, you add Mikhail, you add Julius Randle, who I'm a Julius Randle skeptic when it comes to the playoffs. However, at this point, that's mitigated to a pretty large degree because you don't need him to be some fantastic 1A or 1B at this point. If they can just get him some shots in rhythm, get him in his spots, like, he does add a dynamism to that offense that they lack. I would put the Knicks too. I think the Bucks and Sixers are basically the same tier for me, in the sense that I get why Philly would be seen as better, but I think that the Bucks, if healthy, if that trio is healthy and they can get something, they need to move the Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, Brook Lopez, like, something's got to change a little bit to get a little bit more out of that. But I think we're kind of underestimating how good that group can be, because they were banged up and they kind of became the forgotten group in the East because all these other teams showed something in the playoffs and Milwaukee just fell flat because they were banged up and it just wasn't coming together. I think Milwaukee and Philly would be kind of T3 for me in the East.
To Ben's point, as we take a look at the Western Conference odds here, Thunder 4-1, Nuggets 4-1, Mavericks plus 475, Timberwolves 5-1, these coming from DraftKings, then the Lakers all the way out at 14-1. Robbie, has anything happened in the Western Conference in free agency that moves the needle for you one way or another on any of these teams?
I think OKC's done a great job. And really, for me, it is a combination of OKC shoring up two weaknesses. You upgrade from Josh Giddey, you bring in Alex Caruso. That is an upgrade. That is especially an upgrade in the 16-game season in terms of a guy you can trust to put out there to do what you need and not be played off the floor. Then you had Isaiah Hartenstein, who fills the biggest gap that they had on their roster, which was they just got crushed on the glass. We watched that Dallas series, and they just got destroyed on the boards, had nobody that could physically handle size inside, and we know how big the West is. Hartenstein fills that gap, gives them a lot more kind of diversity in the lineups they can run. You can still run Chet at the five some. You can still play Jalen Williams some, but you just have a lot more diversity. I think that, coupled with the fact that none of the top teams, other than Dallas, I like Najee Marshall, Clay, we'll see. That's a really intriguing addition, but like that's not guaranteed to be a home run or anything at this point in his career. I don't think any of the other top teams of the West did anything. Denver got worse. Minnesota, I think, has gotten a little worse. Losing Monty Morris is sneaky and like not good for them. They were terrible at backup point guard last year. He played some fairly important minutes for them in the playoffs to spell Mike Conley, those games where Mike Conley was out. I don't know who they turned to there. Is Rob Dillingham ready to do that in year one? That's a lot to put on his shoulders. I think Minnesota got a little worse. Denver definitely got worse. And nobody else has really taken the big leap around them. I actually feel pretty good about OKC as to me, the fairly comfortable favorite in the West, even understanding Denver, Minnesota, they're all there, but I think they all took little steps back.
And the reality too of the West, Robbie, there's going to be what, 11, 12 teams who think they can be competitive fighting for a fewer than that available spots. Eight ultimately will get into the postseason. We don't have win totals out yet, but what's a team in that mix that you see taking a step back or a backseat this year and most likely coming up short of expectations?
I mean, Sacramento has once again decided to run it back, and I don't get it. They, you know, they were everybody, you know, we heard all this noise, like they're going after Kuzma, they're going after Ingram, they're going after Lowry, and now it's all cooled off, and it looks like we're just running it back again in Sacramento. I think their team takes a step back. The Lakers are just the same team again. Like, they're going to be a play-in team again, it seems like. I think those are the two that feel kind of odd man out. And then Houston still hasn't done anything either. I don't think they're going to take some leap next year either. So I think those are three teams that are going to be kind of on that 9-10 fringe range that are probably in trouble of missing out on the playoffs with expectations to get in.
Now we just wait. Win totals to come out. We get Summer League total degen betting here the next couple of weeks. Always great to have Robbie Kylan on with us here on Sharp Money. Thanks so much for the insights, man. Be well.
Yep, thanks for having me.
You give Robbie a follow at RKALLAND, senior writer, deputy editor at Up Rocks Sports. When we come back, we'll go back into the NFL and talk about a division near and dear to all of our hearts, the NFC North. That's on the other side.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSIN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best future bets from the VSIN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit vsin.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. As we're back for the final time, a big thank you to Tyler Shoemaker from vsin.com joining us in studio for two segments today. Also, Robbie Kylan from UpRock Sports talking all things NBA free agency. Now that that has started to simmer a little bit, the big names for the most part have since found their new destinations, although we had a couple of small pieces today. Torian Prince to the Milwaukee Bucks, Alec Burks to the Miami Heat, Joe Ingles to the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you just missed that, some minor pieces here going to teams who view themselves as contenders in 2024. Wyatt Tomchick, our producer, everybody hanging out in the back, Reggie, Larry, Sean, Taylor, others I don't know if I missed, but I think that's everybody.
You got everybody.
I did get everybody. Reggie, for the great sign that made its debut on the show today.
Honestly, that was the highlight of the show. Ben, can I ask you a question that we had a discussion about yesterday? This goes back to the spotted cow. But what Matt Brown asked you, if you had to pick two beers for somebody to taste, what would it be?
How many beers has Adam had historically? About
what would you say? You're over 1,000? on your?
On Untapped, I have almost 2,000.
2,000.
But I've probably missed things or started Untapped late. Mm-hmm. So I would say in my lifetime, I've probably tried 2,500 different beers. I'm still missing some from the only time I went to Great American Beer Festival, too, because I was in no position to add to the app.
That's fair. I remember you told me before you went to that fest, you put the over-under at triple digits that you would
consume. Oh, I got there.
You got there.
Yeah.
Maybe not smartly, but you got there.
I mean, so, like, Great American Beer Festival was cool. First of all, it's tough because it's in Denver, right? So you have to deal with the elevation. But also, the way that they put the breweries in this convention center, there's nothing else to do at all, and there's no separation whatsoever. They're just next to each other. So it's just so rapid fire that, like, there's nowhere to kind of step off and take a break or, like, really get food or anything like that.
Yeah,
it was a marathon.
So Ben,
I'm not a huge beer guy, but should Spotted Cow, should it be banned from being sold in the rest of the contiguous United States? Is it that great? Probably not. I get why that. As a result, people would then say it's overrated. Is it still a really damn good beer? Yes, it is. It's good. Its charm is the fact that it cannot be sold outside of state lines, and unlike the sellouts over at Culver's. or Lion and Kugels. My favorite beer, by the way, I would posit that a Summer Shandy. I realize that's a Barry Weiss.
He did not like the Summer Shandy or Spotted. Well, I'm going to say he didn't like. He thought they were
Spotted Cow is fine. I think so Spotted Cow is overrated.
You kind of picture Adam, with like a top hat and like a pipe, and he's drinking really heavy,
Scotch.
Dark. It's like something you would find in a tankard. I'm definitely a little bit of your lighter variety. So, put me on a lake, on a boat with a Shandy or a Spotted, and I'm good to go.
I think the only beer I've ever seen you drink out here is Mango Cart
Golden Road. Mango Cart's good. I do like Mango Cart.
Which is, coincidentally, we talk about ballparks, right across the street from Angel Stadium. That and Carl Strauss Brewery are the two breweries right across the street from Angel Stadium.
What does it say about me that everything I've listed has fruit-associated tones? I have no shame. I've stopped apologizing for that stuff.
No, you like Red's Apple Ale?
Oh, yeah. Give me a Red's.
Oh.
Give me an Angry Orchard.
God.
Angry Orchard's actually good. Gluten-free for those who are.
What's another good one? Mike's Hard Lemonade?
I think it's, everything has an origin. First thing I ever imbibed in.
Seagram's Wine Cooler.
Not Seagram's Wine Cooler. Don't worry, no Boone's Farm to be seen here. The first thing I ever imbibed was a Mike's Hard Lemonade. And I loved it because it tasted like candy. And it got me all jacked up on Mountain Dew. As an ode to one of the great athletes with two first names, Ricky Bobby. I thought I'd mention that. All right, last thoughts on the Major League Baseball here, Adam. We've given out two best bets already. The one that I was going to play, but I was just late. That's the theme. I've just been late to the party today on some of these moves. Ryan Pepio, Michael Wacha doing battle in KC. Rays at Royals. This opened 9 in some shops. It's now down to 8. A lot of those 8s are juiced under here. Even the first 5 is moved from 4.5 on the total down to 4s, although you could get even money on that. I'm just a Ryan Pepio fan. I love the arsenal, his swing and miss stuff, so much movement on his pitches. He's sitting at a 4.40 ERA. All the advanced metrics suggest that should be more like the 350 to 375 range. I'm a believer in Pepio, yet he's definitely had an adjustment, Adam, going from L.A. to that unique, quirky style of pitching they have in Tampa Bay. And I would look to back him as well as Michael Wacha, who the numbers aren't sparkling by any means, but he's a guy who just knows how to gets out. And I would like that matchup today, but I'm not going to buy when it has already moved a full run there in the market.
Yeah, and the thing about Pepio, 4.40 ERA, 3.66 expected ERA, a guy that's done a pretty good job in terms of contact management, but, hasn't really had the ERA success, which is a little bit unfortunate for him. I talked about this on yesterday's show, and to give you an idea of the MLB season that I'm having.
Uh-oh.
So I talked about the Royals and their home road splits on yesterday's show. Going into yesterday's game, at home, they were first in batting average, fifth and on base, third in slugging, second in weighted on base average, had the lowest strikeout percentage in baseball. All of these numbers at home. On the road for the Royals this season, 29th in batting average, 29th in on base percentage, 27th in slugging, 27th in weighted on base average. Their strikeout percentage about 5% higher on the road than it was at home. Like, there's some weird home road shenanigans going on with the Royals here. So I mentioned that on yesterday's show. I take the Royals with Brady Singer against Zach Littell. Uh-oh. Zach Littell, a guy with an ERA over 5 on the road this season. What do the Royals do? 1 run on 6 hits. So that's a, that's a microcosm of the baseball season I've had here so far. But in knowing what I know about Kansas City and their home road splits this year, there's been a lot of attention brought to this here recently, so I don't know if there was something nefarious going on. Maybe we'll find out. But in knowing what I know about them, I can't pick against them at home. I mean, they're 30-17 at home now, 17-23 on the road. They're a Baltimore Orioles-esque offense at home and a Chicago White Sox-esque offense on the road.
It is crazy to phrase it like that, but that is what the numbers indicate so far. It's a good thing.
Which is weird. Like, Kauffman Stadium has no, there's no built-in advantage.
No.
It's not Coors Field, right? It's not Yankee Stadium with the short porch where you can kind of tailor your lineup to that as a result. Kauffman Stadium is almost about as neutral as it gets.
You've always been someone very quick to the jump of pointing out shenanigans, whether it's with baseballs or other things in MLB. You've usually been ahead of the curve on that. Is that your belief? Would it shock you?
Yeah.
And what do you think is actually, like, what is going on? Is there ball degradation / funny business going on at the K?
I don't know. I mean, I also have a theory about Atlanta and Truist Park this year, because if you look at Truist Park and if you look at the numbers from previous seasons, fly balls are not carrying to the same degree in Atlanta that they have been in the past. And the thing that people don't really keep in mind, this happened a few years ago, they put a humidor in all 30 parks. So it was 10 of them, primarily like the retractable roof stadiums to try and, you know, neutralize the ball, kind of make it, you know, kind of balance it out a little bit, whether the roof was open or closed. But they put humidors in all 30 parks now. And when you look at some of the Braves' numbers from early in this season, and not only their numbers, but also visiting offensive numbers, something looked off. Like, they changed some kind of humidor setting, and the ball wasn't carrying as far. So guys like Austin Riley and Matt Olson are off to horrific starts this season. Seemed like something was going on there, because when you compare sample year over year of the same time period, like, it was dramatically different. So this has nothing to do with comparing the summer of 23 to the spring of 24, nothing like that. It was the same actual time period on the calendar, and things were very different in Atlanta. I haven't checked an updated version of it. I'll have to do that here maybe this weekend. But it seemed like maybe the humidor had been messed with in Atlanta. So I don't know if something weird is going on in Kansas City or not. I don't know if they're hacking into PitchCom or something, but it's strange.
As a diehard Braves fan who watches most of their games, I agree with Adam. There have been a lot of times where you hear off the crack of the bat, this is going to be a long home run, and it's barely getting to the warning track.
It is interesting.
Braves have had some very unlucky just hitting this year. I don't know what it is. That.
Braves, and big favorites with Chris Sale today, -210 over Jordan Hicks.
And yet the Braves are, I mean, all in all, without Strider and Acuna, I mean, they're having a pretty good season.
They are. One other play I would look at today, a fade of some pitching here, over 8.5 in the Reds-Yankees game. That is getting blasted right now. You can still find over 8.5, -120. Some books go into 9, but it's the two highest walk rate teams against lefties in the bigs. Andrew Abbott, big regression candidate there. And Carlos Rodon, as the weather turns, Adam, a guy who is always at risk for giving up a lot of long balls.
Rodon's been awful lately. I like this play. I looked at it too.
8.5 over there in Reds and Yankees. That does it for us. Big thanks to Wyatt Tomczyk, our producer. For Adam Burke, I'm Ben Wilson. Always a blast hanging out with you, man.
It was fun.
Another edition of Sharp Money in the books. VSiN Primetime, Tim Murray, Jonathan Von Tobel coming your way right after this.